Welcome to SNI Digital Innovations in Learning in association with UCLA Neurosurgery. Linda Liao, Chairwoman, and its faculty are pleased to bring you the UCLA Department of Neurosurgery 101 Lecture Series on Neurosurgery and Clinical and Basic Neuroscience. This series of lectures are provided free to bring the advances in clinical and basic neuroscience to physicians and patients everywhere. One out of every five people in the world suffer from a neurologically related disease. The lecture is given by Noriko Solomon, Professor, Radiology, Neuroradiology, the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA, Los Angeles, California, United States of America.
Good morning, everybody. So I'm Noriko Solomon. I'm a neuroradiologist. So I'm going to talk about, I'm doing this every year, but anatomy of the cerebral cortex. Using MRI, I don't have any disclosures for this talk. So the objective of this is anatomy is always important for the neurosurgeons and radiologists. So we use lots of MRI to identify tumors and strokes and stuff, and important to know where is the location of the disease. And oftentimes what we are seeing is what kind of tumor is, what kind of disease it is. Maybe it's not as important as where the location is, because this is how it matters for the patients. And then how to approach those disease processes is maybe the most fundamental thing for the neurosurgeon to know. So to review basic anatomy for know the primary cortex, where the primary cortex look like in MRI. And then of course, I know that my brother is a neurosurgeon, my father was a neurosurgeon, and then I know the neurosurgeon, the view of the neurosurgeon is very different from a radiology view. I'm gonna show you that, you know, how to identify the cell site to define the cortex using MRI. And then, you know, sometimes those things can be correlated well to the patient. And then, in CT and MRI, most of the studies you see is axial plane, and the CT was an OM line or orbital meridian line. So this is what the most anatomically decent line, which is mostly corresponding to ACPC line in MRI. And ACPC line has been around for since a pneumoencephalogram era. And I'm maybe the last person who I've seen the training in neuroencephalogram. I'm not as young as I look. So the ACPC line was a very important location. And then, so it's important to identify that's where the ACPC line is. And then we always teach technologies to first things to teach is where the ACPC line is. And then that line is the base of the axial plane. So I go to the midline and you can see the corpus callosum and then fornix, and fornix is gonna come down to the mammary body areas. And then eventually along the anterior portion of this fornix line, this is where the round structure, which is traversing right and left, that's the anterior commissure. Posterior commissura is the superior edge of the supercolliculi. So this round structure, this is a posterior commissura. And then you identify this and you draw a line, and that's gonna be your axial plane. If you look at this in anatomical specimen, this specimen I prepared by myself, and then I took a picture by myself. So I'm using this for last 20 years, 25 years. So this is AC, this is PC, and then this AC-PC line distance is about 27 millimeters in Anglo-Saxon people, and in Japanese, it's 25 millimeters, so that's why we have a round shape brain if you noticed. so eventually the different race had a different distance. But this ACPC plane is the fundamental axial plane, and then coronal plane is going to be this perpendicular to this, right? And then, so if you look at the coronal plane is always difficult to identify which structures are. And then, so I'm gonna add this here for the coronal plane or for the anatomy as well. And then the ACPC plane in the convenient stuff is if you're thinking about the Broca and Wernicke's zone, Broca is always anterior to the AC line. And then the Wernicke is always posterior to, or just posterior to at the level of the posterior commissural line. So anterior posterior commissural is in the, you know, located in the center of the brain, and then central sulcus runs between AC and PC. So if you are looking at the coronal plane, anterior to the AC or posterior to the PC line, the anatomy is very simple because superior, middle, inferior frontal gyri, superior parietal lobule, inferior parietal lobule, which is supramedullary and the angular gyrus. Those are very simple, well-aligned anatomies. And in between, AC and PC have obliquely oriented pre- and post-central gyri lined up. So the anterior to the AC line and posterior to the PC line, and then in between has a very different look in coronal plane, for example. And temporal lobe and occipital lobes are kind of contiguous structures and then kind of lined up until posteriorly. So this is also very easy to see. Yes, Dr.
I just thought perhaps for the more junior people, medical students, you might mention that CAT scans are not aligned like this.
No, PET scans are aligned like this. PET scans are OM line, which is about 10 or 15 degrees different. So it's close enough, but it's a little different angle.
Petrous bone, right? They try to line it up so you don't get as much petrous bone hardening artifact.
So the thing is, CAT scan, MRIs, you're just gonna use a you know, the plane, which you already do the sagittal plane to place the slices. But CAT scan is you know, usually position the patient, and then the scan line is aligned to kind of infrared stuff or into the, you know, lateral margin of the orbit, and then the external orbital canal, right? So that's the assimilate to very most closest line to the ACPC line, if you will. So eventually the anatomy, those, the OM line is, because already ACPC lines already existed as a fundamental plane. So, and try to assimilate to the ACPC line and OM line the closest. And then that was able to identify from the, you know, externally. So that's how the CT scan was organized. Anyway, so the things you can see in the brain and different compartment has different functions, as we or learned in medical school, that you know, difference from liver or lungs, they also have a different compartment. The brain has a different lobes and then has a different functions, which matters to our life. So first, this idiotypic primary cortex, which is sensory motor, and then auditory visual cortex, and that's the things you have to know where it is. And then, so to know the motor sensory cortex, you have to know where the central sulcus is. And the auditory and visual cortex, calcarine fissure and the Hedgehog gyrus has a very peculiar shape, so you are able to easily identifiable. And the after this, identifying these primary cortices, the adjacent to those cortices has a unimodal associative cortex, which is the associated motor helps motor, and associated sensory helps sensory cortex. And then, so the language zone is also very close to this sensory motor cortex, but which is important thing about this associative cortex is, for example, this from the visual cortex, the visual cortex function is important to have, but even you can see something, if you are not able to have a associative cortex to help that visual cortex to associate with other cortices, you can't interpret your visual information to a the real function. So for example, visual cortex, there's a what pathway and where pathway, and what pathway is communicated to the memory function. So what you see, the visual information, you know what this is. You can name this thing and you can identify, you can recognize those objects. Where pathways, you are able to get your visual information to the visual spatial information. So you know where you are, you know where to go, and you can see your body position, you can see the space orientation. So those functions are more important. So not only preserving the visual cortex and optic radiation, but also you have to be aware of this inferior junior fasciculus, so that communicate to the kind of inferior portion of language so that you are able to name objects and recognize face. So that's how the associative cortex are important. And you have this heteromodal high order cortex, which is inferior from temporal parietal lobe or prefrontal cortex, which has motivation, inhibition, and emotion control, and reading, writing, calculation. It's much high order cortex. And then, of course, those are the most important function that human being has. And then, so that's the purpose of when you see the tumor, which lobe it belongs to, and then you're removing that tumor, what can happen? And then that's what you have to think every time you look at the imaging. And this is the Sylvian fissure, and then central sulcus, pre-central sulcus, post-central sulcus, those three sulci and the Sylvian fissure, just kind of the fundamental sulci that you have to identify always. And Sylvian fissure also has a posterior branch and a vertical branch. This vertical branch of the Sylvian fissure is your friend, and if you identify this, you can navigate yourself very easily. And then so I just emphasize this vertical branch of the Sylvian fissure, especially in the axial plane, it's easy to see, it's a deep sulcus. And then if you find this, posterior to this is precentral sulcus. So finding this vertical branch of the Sylvian fissure, you are able to reach a central sulcus. The other way to find the central sulcus in this opercular region is you find the Sylvian fissure, but lateral branch of Sylvian fissure, lateral branch of Sylvian fissure ends, and then that forms the supramarginal gyrus. Anterior margin of the supramarginal gyrus is the postcentral sulcus. So when you see the postcentral sulcus, you also get to the central sulcus. So if you look at the Sylvian fissure portion of the axial plane, you are able to see a vertical branch, and then that's usually reached to the where the central sulcus is, for example. Anterior to this precentral sulcus, the anatomy is pretty simple. Superior, middle, inferior frontal gyri are kind of 1, 2, 3, and the medial to lateral kind of lined up. Posterior to postcentral sulcus is also superior parietal lobule, which is precuneus, and inferior parietal lobules, supramarginal gyrus, and angular gyrus are like a medial to lateral aspect, and then also lined up nicely. So, and then eventually so I'm just focusing on those sulcus to find those sulcus, and then otherwise you have a superior frontal sulcus joins the precentral sulcus, interparietal sulcus join the postcentral sulcus, and then these are also very easy to find anterior posterior sulci. So this is also can be used for high convexity slices to define where the central sulcus is. So when you cut the ACPC line, then you can see in an axial plane, you can see the AC and the PC, this small white matter the lines, and then so you can confirm this is nicely scanned in the ACPC line. So when you have an ACPC plane of the brain, and if you cut in half, then you can see the frontal lobe and parietal lobe, and then temporal and occipital lobe is in a very easy way. So this is the best orientation that you may have, right? And then so here's some of the tips for the, when you're looking at the coronal brain, say you go to the brain cutting and then the pathologist cutting the brain in the coronal and you have no idea where the central sulcus is, right? When you are in the very, very frontal areas, again, superior, middle, inferior frontal gyri, you know, midline to the lateral, and then you have 1, 2, 3, and then kind of line up. So that's much easy. If you go very posteriorly, then you see the suprapartal lobe, interpartal sulcus, and inferpartal lobe, which this one is angular gyrus. If it's more a little bit more anteriorly, you can see the supramedial gyrus instead of angular gyrus, right? So either you have a cut very anterior, cut more posterior in the coronal plane is very simple, right? And then you see the infratrabecular structures. You have to know where the temporal lobe to occipital lobe margin is, but superior, middle, inferior temporal gyrus, fusiform gyrus, parahippocampal gyrus become as more posteriorly superior, middle, inferior occipital gyrus, fusiform gyrus, and lingual gyrus, right? So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 temporal and occipital gyri are contiguous. So that's also easy to see in coronal, right? So to find the central sulcus in coronal plane, then you just find the hechoid gyrus. Hechoid gyrus is, you see the sagittal is this kind of superior indentation. Coronal is also kind of superior indenting. This is a hechoid gyrus in primary auditory cortex. When you see the hechoid gyrus, if you go up, that's the central sulcus. Okay, so you see this, in the ACPC plane, when you find the hechoid gyrus, this is where the central sulcus lined up, right? This is how you orient. This is where the central sulcus is. Well, and then the problem is precentrius, postcentrius are kind of obliquely oriented. So that's why you have to know a little bit more than this, right? So the where you have AC level, anterior commissural is also coronal, is very easy to identify. You can see from the temporal lobe, and these structures. In this line, this is you go higher up when the most lateral component here is the middle frontal gyrus. And then so this is still have a superior frontal gyrus and middle frontal gyrus. And the most inferior component, this is no longer inferior frontal gyrus. This is already a precentral gyrus is coming in. So anterior commissural level, there is no longer Broca's zone or inferior frontal gyrus. So that's one thing you have to remember. And then when you go to the mammary body level, so mammary body is also easy to identify in the coronal plane. When you see this, majority of the lateral portion is a precentral gyrus. Okay, so that's all precentral gyrus, and then some of the cingulate in the superior frontal gyrus, right? So that's under commissural level and mammary body level. And then if you go to the posterior commissural level, then you see this portion is the postcentral gyrus, right? And then this is when you see the paracentral lobule, right? So the paracentral leg area is, you see this in the posterior commissural level in the coronal plane. Then go to the splenium of the corpus callosum. This is when you see the supramarginal gyrus. And then after that is you can just see a simple superior parietal, inferior parietal lobule. So this is how you have to kind of identify yourself. So I think this is a kind of, simple tip, but it's good enough to help you where you are and orient yourself. Now going back to the axial plane, when you look in the frontal lobe, of course you have to identify where the central sulcus is, and then also cingulate gyrus is easy to see in the sagittal plane, but axial plane can be very confusing. And then of course we all have to know where the Broca's area is, right? Central sulcus you see a higher up in the high convexity areas, it's easy to see the superior frontal sulcus. When you see the superior frontal sulcus kind of merges this precentral sulcus. And then so posterior to this is the central sulcus. Or if you use the interpolator sulcus, this anteroposterior orientation sulcus, this is a merges the postcentral sulcus, which is postcentral sulcus. So therefore, this is a central sulcus. And the central sulcus has this characteristic omega shape knob. That's where the hand thumb areas. And so these characteristic features are also helpful to define the central sulcus. And when the region, you know, once the region is in the precentral gyrus, you have to know where those things are. And then, you know, precentral gyrus region in the hand versus face will be different. You just really wanted to preserve the hand areas, but the face motor, it's much less important, if you will. So the face region is homunculus. It's very large, and then the hand is also large, but it's kind of more higher area of the slices. So the way you see is once you start seeing a ventricle, that's already in the face zone. So you see the high convexity in the above the ventricular level, that's where the hand, and you know, if you go to more superiorly in the shoulder portion is. And then the medial aspect, this is paracentral lobe, is a kind of lower extremity location. So the lower extremity one, this is where the paracentral lobule is. And then in the midline structures around the corpus callosum, this singlet gyrus is surrounded by the singlet sulcus here. And the singlet sulcus is kind of merges to a climbing up to the superiority. So that's called the callosum marginal sulcus, and then going out. And then when this singlet sulcus go out, then just anterior, just about 7 millimeters anterior to this is the small notch. This is the end of the central sulcus and the midline. And then this is a sensory and then motor portion of the foot areas, right? So that's called paracentral lobule here. So this is where the paracentral lobule is. That's the end of the callosum marginal sulcus here, right? And then, so paracentral lobe is easy to define. So this is an example of a tumor, which enhancing and it almost looks like an extra-axial, but if you look at the T2 weighted imaging, it's kind of marginally, it's an intra-axial plane in kind of cortical surface of the medial aspect of this lobe. And then so where it is superfrontal sulcus here, and then this is a precentral sulcus, and therefore this is a central sulcus, this is in the precentral gyrus, so this is a precentral gyrus, and then midline portion of the precentral gyrus, therefore this is the motor component of the paracentral lobule. And this was ended up to be a PXA, but you know, those are the important areas that meningioma can happen very often to push the paracentral lobule so that you can see the lower extremity weakness. So that's where the paracentral lobule is. Now, if you're going down to cerebellum fissure level or insular level, then you see you have lots of insinuation, then which one is central sulcus is kind of difficult to see, right? So this is how you use the cerebellum fissure. And then so cerebellum fissure, this is insular here area. So this is cerebellum fissure here. So cerebellum fissure starts here and then ends here, right? So cerebellum fissure starts here and then ends here. So end of the cerebellum fissure, this is where the spermatogonial gyrus is, right? And then anterior marginal spermatogonial gyrus is post-central sulcus. So central sulcus is anterior to it, right? So if you do this, so cerebellum fissure here and this here, and this is a spermatogonial gyrus, so this is a post-central sulcus, therefore this is a central sulcus, right? Or you can just use this barical branch. Barical branch of the cerebellum fissure is this thing here. See, you have from the surface to the insular surface. So this is always very easy to see. So all the rest is like ended in the center, and then so only one reaches to the insular surface. So that's the barical branch of the cerebellum fissure. When you find this, posterior to this is the precentral sulcus, right? Therefore, this is the central sulcus. So that's much easy to see. So this one, you can see this in CT scan. You can see this in old axial scan. So once you know where the vertical branch is, this is precentral sulcus. Therefore, this is a central sulcus. Okay, so that's the, you know, maybe that this is the easiest thing you can learn from this lecture, and you can just find the central sulcus no problem, right? Single gyrosis, of course, if you look at the coronary and surgical view, the single gyrus is above the corpus callosum. This is single gyrus. So this is what the seizure patient with a tumor in the single gyrus. And then, but if you don't have a surgery in coronal view, which is, you know, rare in these days, we have a very good 3D technology can help you to navigate everywhere. But to see a single gyrus in axial is, so that if you look at the coronary surgical, see the single gyrus is above the corpus callosum, right? And then the ending A, so the inferior to the superfrontal gyrus. So the superfrontal gyrus, you have to identify where the superfrontal gyrus ends and then where the single gyrus starts, right? So superfrontal gyrus is a, always have a superfrontal sulcus lateral to it. So when you see the superfrontal sulcus medial to this, this is the superfrontal gyrus. So in this slice, so superfrontal sulcus ends here. So this is superfrontal gyrus. This is middle frontal gyrus. This portion is no longer superfrontal gyrus. Even this is contiguous, right? So this is superfrontal gyrus, and then this is already single gyrus because you don't have a superfrontal sulcus next to it, right? So this is superfrontal sulcus here, right? So that's a superfrontal gyrus here. And then this is single gyrus. And then this one is very straightened. That's the corpus callosum, right? So anterior single gyrus here, and then this is posterior single gyrus here, right? So just see the superfrontal gyrus and single gyrus is just to pay attention to in axial, pay attention to superfrontal sulcus, right? So this one was read as superfrontal gyrus mass, but if you look, your superfrontal sulcus ends here. So this is already in the single gyrus, right? So this person has a kind of limbic seizures, present with limbic seizures, not a frontal type of seizures. And then, so if the read was superfrontal gyrus mass, it just doesn't fit well to the limbic seizures, for example. But this is indeed in the involving the single gyrus, right? That's oligodendroglioma. So Broca's area is, again, you use a vertical branch of the cerebellum fissure, right? Broca's area is inferior frontal gyrus of pars triangularis and pars opercularis, right? So it's kind of lateral aspect of the inferior frontal gyrus. Pars orbitalis is kind of inferior aspect of the inferior frontal gyrus. So you just, this is the sulcus between the insert and cortical surface. This is the vertical branch of the cerebellar fissure here. So Broca's pars opercularis is posterior to this vertical branch. Pars triangularis is anterior to this vertical branch, right? So that's the opercularis and triangularis. So once you find the vertical branch of the cerebellar fissure, then posterior to this, this is the pars opercularis. And then you know this is the central sulcus, right? Precentral gyrus, postcentral gyrus, right? That's pars triangularis. You see, so that's very easy, right? So this is a glioma here in the inferior frontal gyrus area. So is this involving the Broca's zone? Well, most likely is, but you can say much more imprecisely. You see, this is a vertical branch here, precentral sulcus. This is central sulcus. You see, you know how easy this is? And then, so this is in the pars triangularis, right? So this is the vertical branch, opercularis is intact, but triangularis is involved, right? So that's how you have to, you have no problem in identifying those, right? So now, if you go down to this slice, then you can get the covering insula. So this is a temporal lobe here, but just above the temporal lobe in this portion, which as we are just talking about, vertical branch of cerebellum fissure, free central sulcus, this is the inferior frontal gyrus, pars opercularis and triangularis. That's called opercular zone, right? So operculum is a end of the each sulci, this precentral sulcus, central sulcus, postcentral sulcus. There's a tissue in the, at the end, that's the called, this is a frontal operculum, central operculum, and parietal operculum. So that's what the, you know, the configuration creating those names, and then those are the opercular zone. So therefore, in the left hemisphere, the pars opercularis of the inferior frontal gyrus, the part of the Broca's area, is part of the frontal operculum, right? And then, so that, you know, all these areas of the lesions can be very tricky to describe. And then sometimes those things are very close to temporal lobe. So somebody says this is a temporal lobe mass. And of course, if you look at the coronal view, this is not the temporal lobe mass. This is above the tibial fissure, and this is the opercular zone. And then, so again, how to see, this is a varicose branch here. It's kind of hard to see in T1 way imaging, but varicose branch in precentral sulcus, central sulcus, postcentral sulcus. So this is in the central opercular of the lesion is in the central opercular. Right, this patient has a focal cortical dysplasia in this location. Again, this is the varicose branch of the tibial fissure, so precentral sulcus and central sulcus, right? So if you see this, also this is in the frontal pericardium. So this focal cortical dysplasia involving the frontal and then kind of partially in the central pericardium. And then you know where the central sulcus is. So definitely this is involving the kind of face to the mouth area of the precentral gyrus, right? Now, moving on to the temporal lobe. So temporal lobe and occipital lobe are contiguous. And then you have a superior middle inferior temporal gyri, which is MCA territory runs in the lateral aspect. Fujiform gyrus, temporal and occipital lobes kind of shares this fujiform shaped gyrus that's kind of into the inferior surface. And the parahippocampal gyrus is contiguous to the lingual gyrus, it's the most medial aspect. And the hippocampus sitting on the top of the parahippocampal gyrus. And temporal lobe also contains hesiod gyrus, which is primary auditory cortex. And then Wernicke's area is the posterior portion of the superior temporal gyrus on the left side, right? So that's Wernicke's posterior to the posterior commissura, superior middle inferior temporal gyri, which is very easy to identify. And then temporal pole is a continuation of this superior middle temporal gyri kind of crawling up anteriorly, right? So therefore, the most anterior portion of the temporal lobe, there is no fujiform gyrus, you see? So this is the superior middle inferior temporal gyrus kind of going, moving anteriorly. So that's the forming a temporal pole areas, right? That's the ancus where the amygdala is. You see, anterior to the amygdala, this is a temporal pole, which contains of superior middle inferior temporal gyrus. Therefore, temporal pole is MCA territory, right? And then the fujiform gyrus starts with a above around the posterior to the mammary body level, the cerebral peduncle level. And then so between inferior temporal occipital sulcus and collateral sulcus, which is a deep important sulcus, medial to this is the parahippocampal gyrus, right? And then you can see the weak cleft here. So this is where all the temporal occipital vein drain into the vein of transverse sinus. And then, so this is called anterior occipital notch or preoccipital notch. This line divides the temporal lobe and occipital lobe. So superior middle inferior temporal gyri become a superior middle inferior occipital gyri here, up to here, right? And fujiform gyrus is kind of going both sides. And then parahippocampal gyrus become a lingual gyrus after this line. Okay. So coronal view is superior middle inferior temporal gyrus, fujiform gyrus, parahippocampal gyrus, very easy to see the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then on the top of the parahippocampal gyrus, this is the hippocampus sitting on, right? So now the axial will be difficult to see where you are. So you use what you have in the same level. So superior temporal gyrus level, you see the thalamus. So if you see the thalamus laterally, this is superior temporal gyrus. Middle temporal gyrus, you have a midbrain. So if you see the M in midbrain, this is M and the middle temporal gyrus, right? And then medially, you can see the hippocampus. The pons, if you see the pons, this is already inferior temporal gyrus laterally. And then you can fujiform gyrus. And the most medially, there is a parahippocampal gyrus. Okay, so you see the thalamus level, midbrain level, and pons level. You know where you are in level of the temporal gyrus. And the same thing for the occipital gyrus, right? So you see the superior temporal gyrus here. Middle temporal gyrus here, inferior temporal gyrus here, and fujiform gyrus here. So the sagittal fujiform gyrus goes more medially, and you see that this is a collateral sulcus, and fujiform gyrus is mostly inferior portion, right? And then that's the parahippocampal gyrus, and the hippocampus sitting on the top of the parahippocampal gyrus. Okay, so you have to know that you have just can always look through each gyrus where you are in the temporal lobe, and then So this is a focal cortical dysplasia in the hippocampal gyrus and fusiform gyrus here. You see, if you look at this asymmetry, it's pretty obvious, right? But this has been missed in like 4 years because people look for the hippocampus. You see, the hippocampus is also asymmetric. People look for the hippocampus, but it doesn't pay attention to much of the rest of the temporal lobe. But if you are conscientiously looking for superior middle inferior temporal gyrus of fusiform and parahippocampal gyrus, then this is obviously abnormal. The temporal lobe white matter is orientation, and then haziness is seen in those areas, right? So this person has a dysplasia and the hippocampus is also abnormal, but this dysplasia is causing seizures mostly. The hippocampus has a very complicated structure, and head is big and then kind of obliquely oriented, and the body and the tail is kind of crawling up, right? So to find an axial plane hippocampus is always you look for the midbrain. So rather than the midbrain, you can see the head and body and tail of the hippocampus, right? So that when you see this is a midbrain level, you see the hippocampus laterally, right? And then the within the hippocampus, so this anterior to this cerebral peduncle, this is the uncus here, that's the amygdala, right? So the anterior to the amygdala, this the temporal pole here. And then the posterior to the amygdala, this is the hippocampal head. Hippocampal head is kind of laterally oriented. So you see the cerebral peduncle level in the coronal plane, you can see the head of the hippocampus. If you move to the tegmentum portion of the midbrain, then you see the body of the hippocampus, right? And then tail of the hippocampus is kind of crawling up underneath the splenium of the corpuscles, right? So that they just kind of perpendicular turn. So this is the tail of the hippocampus and then just crawling up underneath the splenium of the corpuscles. The underneath the splenium of the corpuscles has a hippocampal commissure. And then so that both phonics are communicated underneath the splenium of the corpuscles called the hippocampal commissure. So this is an example of hippocampal sclerosis. And you see the superior middle inferior temporal gyrus. This is a fusiform gyrus. And then this is a parahippocampal gyrus. And this is a hippocampus, right? Now, this is a thalamus level. So this is superior temporal gyrus. This is superior temporal gyrus. You can see the dilated vessels and entangled vessels. This is the ABM. And then it's not in the lateral location. This is more the deep location, which is posterior to the insula. So here's the posterior to the insula. This is where the Heschel gyrus is. So this person has a Heschel gyrus ABM. Heschel gyrus has a very characteristic shape of the kind of little knob on the near the posterior to the insula. And this is obliquely runs. So you see in axial, this kind of rectangular shape, obliquely runs location that's just superior to the superior temporal gyrus. Right, so the this one is also the thalamus level, but this rectangular shape is what you look for. And then the dominant hemisphere on the left side is always larger than the right side. This is the patient with the tumor, the DNET, and then involving this thalamus level and the supratemporal gyrus. And then, but this rectangular shape location, this is the Heschel gyrus. So that this mass is in the supratemporal gyrus, but also involving the Heschel gyrus. It's very difficult to deal with as a surgery. Well, in this case, find the thalamus and laterally the supratemporal gyrus, and then you find the posterior commissure. So this is where the posterior commissure level is, right? So if you draw a line, and then that's the Wernicke's zone. Usually, located to lateral to the atrium of the lateral ventricle, for example. So that's where the Wernicke's zone, right? So now you know where the Broca is and where the Wernicke is. So this is how you orient yourself in axial plane. So if you're looking at the function MRI, so this is where you look for the activities around those areas. Now moving to the parietal lobe, posterior to the central sulcus. Posterior to the central sulcus, this is post-central gyrus, primarily sensory cortex, superior parietal lobule, and then supramarginal gyrus and angular gyrus. So those are 4 parietal lobes, right? Then you see that once you find the central sulcus, then you can see the posterior to it and post-central gyrus. Post-central gyrus has a you know, in Brodmann's zone is 3A, 3B, 1, 2. And then, so this is one gyrus, but you have different communication coming to input coming to the different zone of the cortex, right? So anterior valley, that's where the mostly the typical sensory input comes. And then this one and two, top and then posterior valley of the postcentral gyrus is much higher function. So when you do a, you feel this, you feel that, and then so the sensory stuff is mostly the anterior valley thing. And then posterior portion is much higher function. So you can just, two-point discrimination, or you give the patient and then different texture of the object, and then, you know, is this soft and then kind of velcro type of surface, and then much more sophisticated sensory input needed, so to test the abnormality of those. So this patient has a metastasis here, and then this remove that stuff, and so remove this one component. Patient has completely intact sensory, but if you give the object in a different shape or kind of a little bit more complicated sensory input, patient is have a difficulty identifying those, for example. So, you know, have those, you know, a little bit detailed, and that we can help you to correlate with the clinical symptom. Precuneus is the superior parietal lobule. So you see the medial aspect, medial to the interparietal sulcus. And then in the midline sagittal view, so you see the single gyrus here, and then the carosal marginal sulcus goes up. And then so posterior to this, between carosal marginal sulcus and the parietal fissure, that's the precuneus. That's an important pathway for the wear pathway from the visual cortex go to the sensory motor direction. And then the anterior to the parietal fissure is a precuneus or single gyrus, and posterior to this is occipital lobe, mostly the cuneus. Precuneus name is that because it's anterior to the cuneus, which is this part of the occipital lobe above the calcarean fissure, right? Inferior parietal lobe is supramarginal gyrus and angular gyrus. It's easy to identify that in the sagittal view, because supramarginal gyrus is the end of the cerebellum fissure. So you follow the cerebellum fissure, end of the cerebellum fissure, this is the supramarginal gyrus comes. If you follow the parallel to the cerebellum fissure and superior temporal sulcus, end of the superior temporal sulcus, that's where you find the angular gyrus. So angular gyrus is always posterior to it. So if you look at the axial view, so this is what the supramarginal gyrus mass is. How do you know this is a supramarginal gyrus? So which one is the central sulcus, right? So if you have an ACPC plane, axial plane, and then you just have a ventricle here, and then you see that middle of the ventricle, you have a little kind of, the narrow S portion. That's where the draw a line here. And then so this is what the central sulcus is. Okay, so that's why the ACPC line plane is very important, because it makes your life easier. So that's the central sulcus. So therefore, this is a post-central sulcus. Anterior margin of the supramarginal gyrus is post-central sulcus, right? So that's what the supramarginal gyrus is. It's about the 4 o'clock location in the ACPC plane stuff in the left side. So, and then this is angular gyrus, and then this is go to the superior parietal lobe. In coronal view, if you see the choroidal plexus and atrium lateral ventricle, that's where the supramarginal gyrus is. This is precuneus here, and then supramarginal gyrus. Now, this one now is more posteriorly located, and then so you don't no longer see the ventricle. So this is a precuneus here, and this is angular gyrus. So how do you know this is confirmed? This is angular gyrus. Again, you draw a line here, and this is a central sulcus. This is a post-central sulcus. So that's a supramarginal gyrus, and then this is angular gyrus. Okay. This is angular gyrus around the 5 o'clock location, right? Occipital lobe is, you have to know the preoccipital notch to divide temporal lobe to the occipital lobe. And midline structure is very easy because there is a parietal fissure. So that's divide the parietal lobe to the occipital lobe. But you have to identify this. This one goes posterior to anterior orientation in axial plane. And then after that is cuneus, and then Karakoram fissure and the lingual gyrus, which is a continuation of the parahippocampal gyrus, right? Karakoram fissure is kind of parallel to the ACPC line. So it's very hard to identify. So I'll tell you how to see the where the Karakoram fissure is. So this is the sagittal plane. You have paradoxal fissure here, right? And then this is higher up, going down, slice is going down, right? So then when you see this, so this is how you see the pericuneus, and then you know, this is occipital lobe. So there is no occipital lobe here because this is a paradoxal fissure, right? And the, this is a paradoxal fissure. This is a paradoxal fissure. So the when you, based on the, where the paradoxal fissure is, posterior to the paradoxal fissure, this is occipital lobe. So the pink is occipital lobe, right? And then anterior to this is a parietal lobe here, superiorly. But if you go down, then you can see the cingulate gyrus in between. So posterior to the splenium is a cingulate gyrus, right? So then this is occipital lobe, right? This one is, you have a cingulate gyrus. This is the precuneus and occipital lobe. This is, there is no occipital lobe, so this is cingulate gyrus and precuneus. Right, so you have to know where the paradoxal fissure look like. So that's the paradoxal fissure in axial plane, right? So this one looks like an occipital lobe, but eventually this is where the paradoxal fissure is. So that's the occipital lobe. This is a posterior cingulate gyrus. So this mass is in the posterior cingulate gyrus, right? So if you look at the sagittal, that's where the posterior cingulate gyrus mass is. That's not the precuneus mass. This is not the occipital lobe mass. And then paradoxal fissure just help you to say this is not the occipital lobe mass. So the preoccipital notch is, you see the, always see the vein because all the vein drain into the transverse sinus, right? So that's all the vein drain into transverse sinus. So if you have transverse sinus thrombosis, that's why you can see the occipital lobe, the temporal pole, you have anywhere, you can see the hemorrhage. Then you have to think of the transverse sinus thrombosis, right? So this is what you see. You see the vein here, you see the vein here, you see the vein here. So that's, and then this is the transverse sinus, right? So all these veins are seen here in the anterior occipital notch. So this is temporal lobe, this is occipital lobe. Okay? Temporal lobe, it becomes occipital lobe, right? This is where the vein of Labe, for example, also joins here at this point to the transverse sinus, okay? In chronal view, paradoxal fissure, it looks like this kind of X-shaped mass area, sulcus. So above this pink line, this is the parietal lobe. So this is the precuneus, this is angular gyrus, superior, middle, inferior occipital gyrus, fusiform gyrus, and this is a lingual gyrus, right? And then the you go to the different slices, you can see the, above the Karakoram fissure, you can have a, the cuneus, for example. The axial plane, the paradoxal fissure ends here, and then you see a below the splenium of the corpus callosum. So you have to see the splenium of the corpus callosum. You don't have a Karakoram fissure yet. You have to go to the slice below the splenium of the corpus callosum, and then this line here, this is a Karakoram fissure, right? So you just have to know the which level of the axial plane you're dealing with. So this one here is, this is a posterior commissural level, for example. Then you can see the big Karakoram fissure here, this person here. And then so that one is, it is easy to identify where the Karakoram fissure is because this person, the Karakoram fissure is very, very enlarged, right? So underneath the splenium of the corpus callosum, we are close to the posterior commissural level is on the axial plane, then you can see the where the Karakoram fissure is, right? So in summary, in axial plane, so you know the central sulcus can be the deepest one, and then you can see the superfrontal sulcus, you know, joins the precentral sulcus, interpretor sulcus, join the postcentral sulcus, and then you can find the central sulcus. You follow the central sulcus, or you can just see the ACPC plane, draw a line in the center. This is the central sulcus, is right? And then you see the paradoxal fissure goes from posterior to the anterior. So if you see this posterior to this is occipital lobe, right? And then in the above the ventricular level, this is the hand area. Once you get the ventricle, this is the face area. You see the corpus callosum anterior to the posterior to the corpus callosum. You can see the cingulate gyrus here and there. When you end the superfrontal sulcus, this is a superfrontal gyrus, but this is a cingulate gyrus, right? So where the cingulate gyrus, identifying the cingulate gyrus is important. When you see the insula lateral to this is operculum, you can see the vertical branch. This is a precentral sulcus. This is central sulcus. This is a Broca's zone, and that's the Heschel gyrus, right? So the and then if you go to a the salamus level, the supratemporal gyrus, and then posterior to the posterior commissure, this is a Wernicke's zone. And then the midbrain level is a middle temporal gyrus. Consular level is the inferior temporal gyrus. Middle temporal gyrus level has a hippocampus, and the inferior temporal gyrus level has a frugiform and parahippocampal gyrus, right? And then the anterior occipital notch, a preoccipital notch, that's temporal lobe become occipital lobe. And then once you pass the splenium level in the posterior commissura portion, then near the posterior commissura location, this is where you can see the calcarine fissure, right? So that's good enough already, right? So thank you very much for your attention. I hope this helps for your practice. Thank you. Yes.
In psychology, they say that the ladies use two hemispheres rather than the men one hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
Most. And that's, they said, because the corpus callosum is thicker in female than male. Do you see that in the imaging, that they have a thicker corpus callosum?
Well, you know, if you know, in these days, that's a very sensitive, you know, matter. But yes, I do. Yeah. So I think, you know, in general, that so the corpus callosum has a different component, and so the isthmus of the corpus callosum, just before the posterior body of the corpus callosum, that portion is male is skinnier than female. So we are always, you know, we are smarter that can be denied that, but. Yes, so there's some differences, yes.
It was excellent, Rico. I just back to the, just so everyone knows again, like pituitary MRI scans are not done on the ACPC1.
No.
They're oblique, so just can't assume anything. But if you see oblique, you wonder what that means. It's being done in line with the chiasm and optic nerves. And when it comes down to it, you can actually see beautifully displayed, but everything that you saw here doesn't necessarily apply to every MRI scan.
Yeah, so you just really have to identify the ACPC and you have to put that line, then that's what, brain tumor is ACPC line. So the stroke is not the ACPC line. Stroke, you're just going to throw the patient in and just scan them, you know, because they're in a hurry. So it's not always in the ACPC line. But in pituitary, it's like, for Dr. Bergschneider, we just do obliquely, that's like, you know, this sphenoidal surgical view. So it's very, very oblique in the, that's MPRH for the pituitary scan. So, all right. Thank you very much for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this presentation. The material provided in this program is for informational purposes and is not intended for use as diagnosis or treatment of a health problem or as a substitute for consulting a licensed medical professional. Please fill out your evaluation of this video to obtain CME credit. This recorded session is available free on snidigital.org. Send your questions or comments to ausman@snidigital.org. From UCLA Neurosurgery and supported by the James I. and Carolyn R. Ausman Educational Foundation, owner of SNI and SNI Digital, and the Waymaster Corporation, producers of the leading Gen television series, Silent Majority Speaks, Role Models, and Medical News Network. Thank you.